Books on Tape presents A Game of Thrones, Book One of A Song of Ice and Fire, by George R. R. Martin, read by Roy Dotrice. Prologue. "We should start back," Garrett urged, as the woods began to grow darker on them. "The wildlings are dead." "Do the dead frighten you?" Sir Waymar Royce asked, with just the hint of a smile. Garrett did not rise to the bait. He was an old man, past 50, and he had seen the lordlings come and go.
"Dead is dead," he said. "We have no business with the dead."
"Are they dead?" Royce asked softly. "What proof have we?"
"Will saw them," Garrett said, "and if he says they're dead, that's proof enough for me."
Will had known they would drag him into the quarrel sooner or later. He wished it had been later rather than sooner. "My mother told me that dead men sing no songs," he put in.
"My wet nurse said the same thing, Will," Royce replied. "Never believe anything you hear at a woman's tit. There are things to be learned even from the dead."
His voice echoed too loud in the twilight forest.
"We have a long ride before us," Garrett pointed out. 8 days, maybe 9, and night is falling."
Sir Waymar Royce glanced at the sky with disinterest.
"It does that every day about this time. Are you unmanned by the dark, Garrett?"
Will could see the tightness around Garrett's mouth, the barely suppressed anger in his eyes, under the thick black hood of his cloak. Garrett had spent 40 years in the Night's Watch, man and boy, and he was not accustomed to being made light of. Yet it was more than that. Under the wounded pride, Will could sense something else in the older man. You could taste it, a nervous tension that came perilous close to fear. Will shared his unease. He had been 4 years on the Wall. The first time he had been sent beyond, all the old stories had come rushing back, and his bowels had turned to water. He had laughed about it afterwards. He was a veteran of 100 rangings by now, and the endless dark wilderness that the Southerns called the Haunted Forest had no more terrors for him. Until tonight. Something was different tonight. There was an edge to this darkness that made his hackles rise. 9 days they had been riding, north and northwest, and then north again, farther and farther from the Wall, hard on the track of a band of wildling raiders. Each day had been worse than the day that had come before. Today was the worst of all. A cold wind was blowing out of the north, and it made the trees rustle like living things. All day Will had felt as though something was watching him, something cold and implacable that loved him not. Garrett had felt it too. Will wanted nothing so much as to ride hell-bent for the safety of the Wall, but that was not a feeling to share with your commander, especially not a commander like this one. Sir Waymar Royce was the youngest son of an ancient house with too many heirs. He was a handsome youth of 18, grey-eyed and graceful and slender as a knife. Mounted on his huge black destrier, the knight towered above Will and Garrett on their smaller garrons. He wore black leather boots, black woolen pants, black moleskin gloves, and a fine supple coat of gleaming black ringmail over layers of black wool and boiled leather. Sir Waymar had been a sworn brother of the Night's Watch for less than half a year, but no one could say he was not prepared for his vacation, at least insofar as his wardrobe was concerned. His cloak was his crowning glory, sable, thick, and black, and soft as sin.
"Bet he killed them all himself, he did," Garrett told the barracks over wine. "Twisted their little heads off, our mighty warrior."
They had all shared a laugh. "It is hard to take orders from a man you laughed at in your cups," Will reflected as he sat shivering atop his garron. Garrett must have felt the same.
"Mormont said, 'We shall track them,' and we did," Garrett said. "They're dead. They shan't trouble us no more. There's hard riding before us. I don't like this weather. If it snows, we could be a fortnight getting back, and snow's the best we can hope for. Ever seen an ice storm, my lord?"
The lordlings seemed not to hear him. He studied the deepening twilight in that half-bored, half-distracted way he had. Will had ridden with the knight long enough to understand that it was best not to interrupt him when he looked like that.
Tell me again what you saw, Will. All the details. Leave nothing out. Will had been a hunter before he joined the Night's Watch. Well, a poacher, in truth. Malister Freeriders had caught him red-handed in the Malister's own wood, skinning one of the Malister's own bucks, and it had been a choice of putting on the black or losing a hand. No one could move through the woods as silent as Will, and it had not taken the Black Brothers long to discover his talent. The camp is 2 miles further on over that ridge, hard beside a stream, Will said. I got close as I dared. There's 8 of them. Men and women both. No children I could see. They put up a lean-to against the rock. The snow has pretty well covered it now, but I could still make it out. No fire burning, but the fire pit was still plain as day. No one moving. I watched a long time. No living man ever lay so still. Did you see any blood? Well, no, Will admitted. Did you see any weapons? Some swords, a few bows. One man had an axe. Heavy-looking, double-bladed, a cruel piece of iron. It was on the ground beside him, right by his hand. Did you make note of the position of the bodies? Will shrugged. A couple are sitting up against the rock, most of them on the ground, fallen-like. Or sleeping, Royce suggested. Fallen, Will insisted. There's one woman up an ironwood, half hid in the branches. A far eyes. He smiled thinly. I took care she never saw me. When I got closer, I saw that she wasn't moving neither. Despite himself, he shivered. You have a chill? Royce asked. Some, Will muttered. The wind, my lord. The young knight turned back to his grizzled man of arms. Frost-fallen leaves whispered past them, and Royce's destrier moved restlessly. What do you think might have killed these men, Garrett? Sir Waymar asked casually. He adjusted the drape of his long sable cloak. It was a cold, Garrett said, with iron certainty. I saw men freeze last winter, and the one before, when I was half a boy. Everyone talks about snows 40 feet deep, and how the ice wind comes howling out of the north. But the real enemy is the cold. It steals up on you quieter than will, and at first you shiver, and your teeth chatter, and you stamp your feet, and dream of mulled wine and nice hot fires. It burns, it does. Nothing burns like the cold, but only for a while. Then it gets inside you and starts to fill you up. And after a while, you don't have the strength to fight it. It's easier just to sit down or go to sleep. They say you don't feel any pain toward the end. First you go weak and drowsy, and everything starts to fade. And then it's like sinking into a sea of warm milk. Peaceful like.
Oh, such eloquence, Garrett, Sir Waymar observed. I never suspected you had it in you.
I've had the cold in me too, lordling.
Garrett pulled back his hood, giving Sir Waymar a good long look at the stumps where his ears had been.
2 ears, 3 toes, and the little finger of my left hand. I got off light. We found my brother frozen at his watch, with a smile on his face.
Sir Waymar shrugged.
You ought to dress more warmly, Garrett.
Garrett glared at the lordling. The scars around his ear holes flushed red with anger, where Maester Aemon had cut the ears away.
We'll see how warm you can dress when the winter comes.
He pulled up his hood and hunched over his garron, silent and sullen. If Garrett said it was the cold, Will began.
Have you drawn any watches this past week, Will?
Yes, my lord. There never was a week when he did not draw 12 bloody watches. What was a man driving at?
And how did you find the wall?
Weeping, Will said, frowning. He saw it clear enough, now that the lordling had pointed it out. They couldn't have frozen. Not if the wall was weeping. It wasn't cold enough. Royce nodded.
Right, lad. We've had a few light frosts this past week, and a quick flurry of snow now and then, but surely no cold fierce enough to kill 8 grown men. Men clad in fur and leather, let me remind you, with shelter near at hand, and the means of making fire.
The knight's smile was cocksure.
Will lead us there. I would see these dead men for myself.
And then there was nothing to be done for it. The order had been given, and honor bound them to obey.
Will went in front, his shaggy little Garen picking the way carefully through the undergrowth. A light snow had fallen the night before, and there were stones and roots and hidden sinks lying just under its crust, waiting for the careless and the unwary. Sir Waymar Royce came next, his great black destrier snorting impatiently. The war horse was the wrong mount for ranging, but try and tell that to the lordling. Garrett brought up the rear. The old man-at-arms muttered to himself as he rode. Twilight deepened. The cloudless sky turned a deep purple, the colour of an old bruise, then faded to black. The stars began to come out. A half-moon rose. Will was grateful for the light.
"We can make a better pace than this, surely," Royce said, when the moon was full risen.
"Not with this horse," Will said. Fear had made him insolent. "Perhaps my lord would care to take the lead." Sir Waymar Royce did not deign to reply. Somewhere off in the wood, a wolf howled. Will pulled his Garen over beside an ancient gnarled ironwood and dismounted.
"Why are you stopping?" Sir Waymar asked.
"Best to go the rest of the way on foot, my lord. It's just over that ridge." Royce paused a moment, staring off into the distance, his face reflective. A cold wind whispered through the trees, his great sable cloak stirred behind him like something half alive.
"There's something wrong here," Garrett muttered.
The young knight gave him a disdainful smile.
"Is there?"
"Well, can't you feel it?" Garrett asked. "Listen to the darkness."
Will could feel it. 4 years in the night watch, and he had never been so afraid. What was it?
"Wind! Trees rustling! A wolf! Which sound is it that unmans you so, Garrett?"
When Garrett did not answer, Royce slid gracefully from his saddle. He tied the destrier securely to a low-hanging limb, well away from the other horses, and drew his longsword from its sheath. Jewels glittered in its hilt, and the moonlight ran down the shining steel. It was a splendid weapon, castle-forged and new-made from the look of it. Will doubted it had ever been swung in anger.
"The trees press close here," Will warned. "That sword will tangle you up, my lord. Better a knife."
"If I need instruction, I will ask for it," the young lord said. "Garrett, stay here. Guard the horses."
Garrett dismounted.
"We need a fire. I'll see to it."
"How big a fool are you, old man, if there are enemies in this wood, as far as the last thing we want?"
"There's some enemies a fire will keep away," Garrett said. "Bears and dire wolves and other things."
Sir Waymer's mouth became a hard line.
"No fire."
Garrett's hood shadowed his face, but Will could see the hard glitter in his eyes as he stared at the knight. For a moment he was afraid the older man would go for his sword. It was a short, ugly thing, its grip discolored by sweat, its edge nicked from hard use. But Will would not give an iron bub for the lordling's life if Garrett had pulled it from its scabbard. Finally, Garrett looked down.
"No fire," he muttered, low under his breath.
Royce took it for acquiescence and turned away.
"Lead on," he said to Will.
Will threaded their way through a thicket, then started up the slope to the low ridge where he had found his vantage point under a sentinel tree. Under the thin crust of snow, the ground was damp and muddy, slick footing, with rocks and hidden roots to trip you up. Will made no sound as he climbed. Behind him he heard the soft metallic slither of the lordling's ringmail, the rustle of leaves and muttered curses as reaching branches grabbed at his longsword and tugged at his splendid sable cloak. The great sentinel was right there at the top of the ridge, where Will had known it would be, its lowest branches a bare foot off the ground. Will slid in underneath, flat on his belly in the snow and the mud, and looked down on the empty clearing below. His heart stopped in his chest. For a moment he dare not breathe. Moonlight shone down on the clearing. The ashes of the fire pit, the snow-covered lean-to, the great rock, the little half-frozen stream, everything was just as it had been a few hours ago.
They were gone. All the bodies were gone.
"Gods!" he heard behind him.
A sword slashed at a branch as Sir Waymar Royce gained the ridge. He stood there beside the sentinel, longsword in hand, his cloak billowing behind him as the wind came up, outlined nobly against the stars for all to see.
"Get down," Will whispered urgently. "Something's wrong."
Royce did not move. He looked down at the empty clearing and laughed.
"Your dead men seem to have moved camp, Will."
Will's voice abandoned him. He groped for words that did not come.
It was not possible.
His eyes swept back and forth over the abandoned campsite, stopped on the axe, a huge, double-bladed battle axe still lying where he had seen it last, untouched, a valuable weapon.
"On your feet, Will," Sir Waymar commanded. "There's no one here. I won't have you hiding under a bush."
Reluctantly, Will obeyed. Sir Waymar looked him over with open disapproval.
"I'm not going back to Castle Black of failure on my first ranging. We will find these men."
He glanced around.
"Up the tree. Be quick about it. Look for a fire."
Will turned away, wordless. There was no use to argue. The wind was moving. It cut right through him. He went to the tree, a vaulting grey-green sentinel, and began to climb. Soon his hands were sticky with sap, and he was lost among the needles. Fear filled his gut like a meal he could not digest. He whispered a prayer to the nameless gods of the woods and slipped his dirk free of its sheath. He put it between his teeth to keep both hands free for climbing. The taste of cold iron in his mouth gave him comfort. Down below, the lordling called out suddenly,
"Who goes there?"
Will heard uncertainty in the challenge. He stopped climbing. He listened. He watched. The woods gave answer. The rustle of leaves, the icy rush of the stream, a distant hoot of a snow owl. The others made no sound. Will saw movement from the corner of his eye. Pale shapes gliding through the wood. He turned his head, glimpsed a white shadow in the darkness, then it was gone. Branches stirred gently in the wind, scratching at one another with wooden fingers. Will opened his mouth to call down a warning, and the words seemed to freeze in his throat. Perhaps he was wrong. Perhaps it had only been a bird, a reflection on the snow, some trick of the moonlight. What had he seen, after all?
"Will, where are you?" Sir Waymar called up. "Can you see anything?"
He was turning in a slow circle, suddenly wary, his sword in hand. He must have felt them, as Will felt them. There was nothing to see.
"Answer me! Why is it so cold?"
It was cold. Shivering, Will clung more tightly to his perch, his face pressed hard against the trunk of the sentinel. He could feel the sweet, sticky sap on his cheek. A shadow emerged from the dark of the woods. It stood in front of Royce. Tall it was, and gaunt, and hard as old bones, with flesh pale as milk. Its armor seemed to change color as it moved. Here it was white as new-fallen snow, there black as shadow, everywhere dappled with the deep grey-green of the trees. The patterns ran like moonlight on water with every step it took. Will heard the breath go out of Sir Waymar Royce in a long hiss.
"Come no further," the lordling warned.
His voice cracked like a boy's. He threw the long sable cloak back over his shoulders to free his arms for battle, and took his sword in both hands. The wind had stopped. It was very cold. The other slid forward on silent feet. In its hand was a long sword like none that Will had ever seen. No human metal had gone into the forging of that blade. It was alive with moonlight, translucent, a shard of crystal so thin that it seemed almost to vanish when seen edge on. There was a faint blue shimmer to the thing, a ghost light that played around its edges, and somehow Will knew it was sharper than any razor. Sir Waymar met him bravely.
"Dance with me, then."
He lifted his sword high above his head, defiant. His hands trembled from the weight of it, or perhaps from the cold. Yet in that moment, Will thought, he was a boy no longer, but a man of the night's watch. The other halted. Will saw its eyes, blue, deeper and bluer than any human eyes,
a blue that burned like ice. They fixed on the longsword, trembling on high, watched the moonlight run in cold along the metal. For a heartbeat he dared to hope. They emerged silently from the shadows, twins to the first. Three of them, four, five. Sir Waymar may have felt that cold that came with them, but he never saw them, never heard them. Will had to call out. It was his duty, and his death if he did. He shivered and hugged the tree and kept the silence. The pale sword came shivering through the air. Sir Waymar met it with steel. When the blades met, there was no ring of metal on metal, only a high, thin sound at the edge of hearing, like an animal screaming in pain. Royce checked a second blow and a third, then fell back a step. Another flurry of blows, and he fell back again. Behind him, to right, to left, all around him, the watcher stood patient, faceless, silent, the shifting patterns of their delicate armor making them all but invisible in the wood. Yet they made no move to interfere. Again and again the swords met, until Will wanted to cover his ears against the strange, anguished keening of their clash. Sir Waymar was panting from the effort now, his breath steaming in the moonlight. His blade was white with frost. The others danced with pale blue light. Then Royce's parry came a beat too late. The pale sword bit through the ringmail beneath his arm. The young lord cried out in pain. Blood welled between the rings. It steamed in the cold, and the droplets seemed red as fire where they touched the snow. Sir Waymar's fingers brushed his side. His moleskin glove came away soaked with red. The other said something in a language that Will did not know. His voice was like the cracking of ice on a winter lake, and the words were mocking. Sir Waymar Royce found his fury. "For Robert!" he shouted, and he came up snarling, lifting the frost-covered longsword with both hands and swinging it around in a flat sidearm slash with all his weight behind it. The other's parry was almost lazy. When the blades touched, the steel shattered. A scream echoed through the forest night, and the longsword shivered into 100 brittle pieces, the shards scattering like a rain of needles. Royce went to his knees, shrieking, and covered his eyes. Blood welled between his fingers. The watchers moved forward together, as if some signal had been given. The swords rose and fell, all in deathly silence. It was cold butchery. The pale blade sliced through ring mail as if it were silk. Will closed his eyes. Far beneath him, he heard their voices and laughter, sharp as icicles. When he found the courage to look again, a long time had passed, and the ridge below was empty. He stayed in the tree, scarce daring to breathe, while the moon crept slowly across the black sky. Finally, his muscles cramping and his fingers numb with cold, he climbed down. Royce's body lay face down in the snow, one arm outflung. The thick sable cloak had been slashed in a dozen places. Lying dead like that, you saw how young he was. A boy. He found what was left of the sword a few feet away, the end splintered and twisted like a tree struck by lightning. Will knelt, looked around wearily, and snatched it up. The broken sword would be his proof. Garrett would know what to make of it, and if not him, then surely that old bear Mormont or Maester Aemon. Would Garrett still be waiting with the horses? He had to hurry. Will rose. Sir Waymar Royce stood over him. His fine clothes were a tatter, his face a ruin. A shard from his sword transfixed the blind white pupil at his left eye. The right eye was open. The pupil burned blue. It saw. The broken sword fell from nerveless fingers. Will closed his eyes to pray. Long, elegant hands brushed his cheek, then tightened around his throat. They were gloved in the finest moleskin, and sticky with blood. Yet the touch was icy cold. Bran. The morning had dawned clear and cold, with a crispness that hinted at the end of summer. They set forth at daybreak to see a man beheaded, 20 in all, and Bran rode among them, nervous with excitement. This was the first time he had been deemed old enough to go with his lord father and his brothers to see the king's justice done. It was the 9th year of summer and the 7th of Bran's life.